kiss your lips a thousand times, and more times than I can count. I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
life from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I welcome you. Today, we're going to be sharing the latest on, do violent video games increase aggressiveness in children? Also, we're going to look at breast cancer screening. It's very popular out there, especially in older women. Does it work, or is it actually harmful? We'll deal with that as well. Additionally, we're going to examine one of those ads you see commonly on television about all you get from a Subway meal. Remember, it's fresh, is it? Well, Physicians for Social Responsibility took a careful look at those Italian BMT sandwiches and the double chicken chop salad and the Fritos chicken enchilada melt. Not so good, and we'll explain why. Also, elderly women may benefit from a higher amount of protein, and why one doctor, a Dr. Gajardra, medical doctor, why he ditched the statin drugs for good. Also, from Sergi and GreenMed Info, we're going to take a more in-depth look today at evidence-based medicine. Now, why? Because we're told that virtually everything worth doing is based upon good science that supports the medical rationale for doing it. Okay, but what if 90% of all peer-reviewed clinical research, the holy grail, the conventional medical system, is exaggerated or worse, completely false? What if we've been conned, used, abused from the scientific and medical communities, from the medical industrial complex, from the FDA and the USDA, from the U.S. Public Health Service, the National Cancer Group? What if every agency of government has known about the con and has allowed it to happen? What it means is that many of us who've lost loved ones at the hospital and different treatments, well, we should be really aggrieved at this. Then my guest in the second part of our program is going to talk about the vitamin pyramids, that a new way of looking at essential needs. We're also, from our environmental segment, deep ocean current may slow due to climate change. 7 years ago, I mentioned that there's a big problem in the 12 tipping points. One of those tipping points could tip and cause the warm water that goes from the southern hemisphere up in a circular motion around Ireland and Europe and comes back down, bringing cold water with it that is warmed, and then this loop just continues, that this conveyor belt could slow down. If it did, this was 7 years ago I said this, if it did, it could have cataclysmic impact on the weather in Europe, all of Europe. Well, it's happening. I'll tell you about it. Quote, deep ocean current may slow due to current change. I'll get into that. And also from our environmental segment, glyphosate. That's the chemical in Roundup. In humans and animals, there's a new study. It's shocking. From our social issues, I'll be doing continuing with the commentary on beyond neoliberal miseducation, what they're doing to co-opt, privatize, and destroy our educational system for profit. You've been told that everything's just fine. We've got a housing boom. No, we don't. They've lied to you. I'll give you the facts. We have the charts. We have the homes from the DataQuick Nation's home sales snapshot. And you've been, again, lied to. Either the people on the talking shows on television are simply incredibly stupid. That's possible, based upon the limited intellectual range I hear them talking on. Or they are aware of a problem and continue, for their own self-interest, to misguide us. As you see, we take on these issues every day. We'll continue now. We've been led to believe by those people in the media who sell us these products, as well as those who profit from them, that there's no problem with violent kid games, which are the most popular selling games in the world. Each new game that comes out can sell over $1 billion, with some as high as $4 billion per game. Well, they could be wrong. According to Medical News Today, habitually playing violent game videos appears to increase aggression in children regardless of parental involvement and other factors. Now, why is this important? Because more than 90% of American youth play video games, and many of these games depict violence, which is often portrayed as fun, justified, or without negative consequences. The authors tracked children and adolescents over 3 years and was looking at aggressive behavior, aggressive cognition. For example, aggressive cognition, what is that? Well, let's say you have aggressive fantasies, beliefs about aggression, and attaching motives of hostility to ambiguous provocations, and empathy. And the researchers also examined the effects of age, sex, parental monitoring, and other traits. Among these children, they found that the more violent games they watched, the more aggressive they became, even with parental input. So, that's the latest. Harm outweighs benefits for women aged 70 and over in the National Breast Cancer Screening Program. Extending National Breast Cancer Screening Programs to women over the age of 70 does not result in a decrease in the numbers of cancers detected at advanced stages, according to new research from the Netherlands. Instead, researchers told the European Breast Cancer Conference that their findings suggest that extending screening programs to older women results in a large proportion of women being overtreated and at risk from harmful effects like, well, surgery that is not necessary or chemotherapy, because these women are more likely to die from other cancers than from tumors detected in the early stages of growth. So that's important. You've all, if you watch television, I'm sure you've seen the commercials, and especially the ones where Subway, everyone's cheery, everything is supposed to look fresh and wholesome. This is from the Physicians for Social Responsibility. Thinking of heading to Subway to pick up a quick and nutritious lunch? Don't let its ad campaign called Fresh Slogan or Menu Dressing fool you. From its partnerships with top U.S. Olympians and Michelle Obama to its work with the American Heart Association, Subway has been touting itself as the key to staying fit and trim all this month. However, dietitians with the Physicians Committee have uncovered several questionable suggestions in Subway's campaign, Nutrition Facts. How many ingredients do you think there are in the Italian BMT? 138. That's correct. In the double chicken, 100 milligrams of cholesterol, 500 milligrams of sodium. In the Fritos, almost 500 calories, and 2,340 milligrams of sodium in one item. Wow. Subway's slogan promises that customers will eat fresh. But look closely at the menu. Most popular sandwich reveals the opposite. The best-selling Italian BMT consists of three different types of processed meat, salami, pepperoni, and cured ham. But that's not all. This 5-foot long also gives an awful lot of ingredients. On the wheat bread with Italian dressing, provolone cheese, and vegetables contain a shocking 138 different ingredients. And these are not healthy ingredients. The three meats alone account for 55 of those ingredients. With an ingredient list that a Subway meat is opposite of fresh and the epitome of processed. Processed meats, as this audience knows, have been linked to a host of devastating diseases, including colorectal cancer, heart disease, lung disease, bladder cancer, and diabetes. A recent study published by the American Journal of Epidemiology even found that people who consume the most processed meat products, compared with those who consume them rarely or never, have a 23% greater risk of death from all causes. The link between processed meat and disease is clear. Why is a company who prides itself on health promoting a sandwich linked to cancer, heart disease, and diabetes? Throughout this month, Subway has been promoting its menu as heart healthy by urging consumers to look for the check, which is the American Heart Association's designation for heart healthy meals. One option that has earned the check is the double chicken chop salad. Customers who order this salad might not realize that it actually contains more cholesterol than a Big Mac. The salad's 100 milligrams of cholesterol beats out McDonald's Big Mac. Studies have shown that for many people, even 100 milligrams serving of cholesterol can raise total cholesterol by 5 points. Excess amounts of cholesterol in the blood bind to artery walls, forming the plaque that leads to heart disease. By marking the double chicken chop salad as heart healthy, Subway is encouraging its customers to choose dangerous options in the name of health. And then, of course, it's endorsed by these athletes. Subway premiered a brand new sandwich this month, the Fritos Chicken Enchilada Melt. This shockingly unhealthy sandwich packs chicken, cheese, and fried chips onto a foot-long sandwich roll. It contains 1,160 calories, which is more than 6 times the amount in a Krispy Kreme donut, a staggering 480 of the enchiladas melt comes from fat. That's an enormous amount of fat. Surprisingly, Subway has chosen its Olympic athletes, who are the ambassadors of the Fit Fresh campaign, to promote the sandwich. The corresponding ad campaign implies that Olympic athletes consume dishes like the Fritos Chicken Enchilada Melt and remain fit and healthy. Reality check? Multiple studies have shown that exercise cannot erase the negative effects of a poor diet, and research has proven that eating just one high-fat meal, just one, that's all, one, can raise triglyceride levels, which measure fat in the blood, by 60% within 2 hours. Hello, that means that you can have a stroke. Why do they do it? Well, money. Contact the American Heart Association. Ask them, how much money did you receive from Subway for giving you them your endorsement? And why haven't you been doing the report that I just did on why it's not something you should be endorsing? And the athletes, well, I would not look at any of the athletes that I know of as an example of prudence, researcher, scholarship. Elderly women can benefit from higher amounts of protein. This is from Purdue University. In fact, if they consume nearly 30% more protein than current nutrition guidelines, it would be a good idea. Quote, our data suggests that the current dietary protein requirements estimate may be too low and reinforces that more research is needed to identify accurate amounts for older women. And I think the current recommended dietary allowance values serve an important role, but they need to go up. This was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And they're suggesting that the current recommended allowance for women 70 and older is about 46 grams for 130-pound women. I believe that is too low. It should be around 55 grams. And also, this is from a doctor, medical doctor. He said, why I've ditched statins for good. I'll share this. It says, as experts clash over proposals that millions more of us take statins to prevent heart disease and stroke, a vascular surgeon explains why he feels better without them. Quote, when I had a routine health checkup 8 years ago, my cholesterol was so high that the laboratory thought there had been a mistake. I had 9.3 millimoles of cholesterol in every liter of blood, almost twice the recommended maximum. It was quite a shock. The GP, general practitioner, instantly prescribed statins, the cholesterol-lowering drugs that are supposed to prevent heart disease and strokes. For 8 years, I faithfully popped my 20 milligrams of a statin pill without side effects. Then one day, last May, I stopped. It wasn't a snap decision. After looking more closely at the research, I'd concluded that statins were not going to save me from a heart attack and that my cholesterol levels were not all that serious. When I informed my GP of my decision 3 months later, I wasn't entirely honest. Rather than say I was skeptical about the drugs, I told the doctor I'd quit the statins because they were causing pain in my arm. He didn't bat an eyelid. Evidence from the drug industry published this month, evidence I suspect was heavily reliant on data from the drug industry, as Dr. James LaFanu point out on these pages last week, may suggest that side effects are uncommon. But previous studies have found that 1 in 5 people on statins suffer adverse side effects, from muscle pain and diarrhea to memory loss and blurred vision. The GP simply suggests I try another brand of statin. The sooner the better, he said, given that I'd already been off my prescription for 3 months. Hang on, I said. Could you give me a blood test first? When the results came back, he was amazed that my total cholesterol was lower than when I'd been on the statins. After 3 months with no statins, no drugs, I had dropped my blood cholesterol level naturally. The only major changes I'd made in my lifestyle since coming off statins were eliminating sugar, eliminating alcohol, eliminating bread and starchy foods, and many experts now believe that sugar is emerging as a true villain in the heart disease story. Well, after decades of demonizing saturated fat as being the cause of heart disease, my recent meta-analysis of 70 studies by Cambridge University showed that not to be the case. Typically, I was eating red meat 3 or 4 times a week and enjoying butter, full-fat milk, and plenty of eggs. You would have thought that after 3 months on a diet so high in saturated fat, my cholesterol would have shot back up to pre-statin levels, but it did not. And then he goes on to talk about the dangers of the statins and what he found out. And here's my thoughts on this. First and foremost, I have seen people who are on a meat-based diet, but they have cut out sugar, refined carbohydrates, alcohol, artificial sweeteners, and their blood chemistry is better. That's a good thing. However, what they're not mentioning and what they're not measuring is the harm that comes from animal proteins, such as the lack of fiber in the diet, the increased risk of hurting your arteries and the epithelium in the arteries, pro-inflammatory cytokines that will impact your brain with amyloid plaque formation, and also the elevation in C-reactive protein and homocysteine levels, which them themselves can cause heart attack or stroke. So I can understand if he's only looking at his cholesterol, and that's what he was looking at, total cholesterol, he would be able, and I've seen many people, have lower cholesterol with a high-fat diet. But not all saturated fats are bad. Coconut oil is a saturated fat, but it's very healthy for you. Antiviral, antibacterial, helps improve brain function, turns off inflammation. And if you were to eat organic dairy, I've seen people whose blood chemistries are fine eating organic dairy. But what are you not looking at? When I sit down with a person and I look at their full blood chemistry, I'm looking at their hormone levels, because in all that meat that surgeon was eating, he's powering in arachidonic acid. And arachidonic acid by itself can cause heart disease. The meat in the diet, the eggs, can cause colorectal cancer and prostate cancer and breast cancer. So interesting how someone has an epiphany, sees how dangerous the drugs that he had been prescribing and others prescribing and he using, and now he's come to that truth. Now let us hope that he goes forward and speaks with medical doctors who are holistic and vegan. There are many. And in fact, I just have a new film. It's waiting for the book, where all the doctors in the film, and there are a lot of them, all of them, like Joel Fuhrman, they're all vegan. So that's his next step. And by the way, I've sent him email, a list of all the medical doctors who are vegan and how healthy they are. And what I'm sharing with you, I shared with him. And finally today, I want to talk about evidence-based medicine, because in many of the debates that I've had over the years, and I've had over 500 debates, they always try to say, well, you know, you in the alternative field, you're not working with evidence-based medicine, no matter what the subject is, heart disease, cancer, AIDS. And we have evidence-based medicine, and that's why, for example, I was in a debate on Fox Network recently, and there was a woman there, and they started off saying, a medical doctor, that this woman, husband, ended up with cancer and died down at some clinic in North Carolina, and using alternative therapy, and it cost the man $72,000. As if, okay, then if he tried alternative therapy, it means no one should be trying alternative therapy because it didn't work for this man. So, my question was simple. Did your husband first go through orthodox therapy with surgery, radiation, chemotherapy? Yes. Didn't that cost the majority of it? Yes. Why aren't you mentioning, I said to the Dr. Siegel, why aren't you mentioning the 543,000 people who died this year at an average cost of $220,000 using orthodox therapy? And why aren't you looking at the clinics that treat people using holistic venues that survived and are well? So I would look at all the evidence. You've brought one person who had tried orthodox therapy, it failed, and you say that, and then you didn't differentiate how much the chemotherapy cost versus how much some herbs or whatever the therapy was. Now, I don't even know who's down in North Carolina using alternative therapies for cancer. But that's the game they play, that they have evidence. They don't have evidence on their side. And that's true in all areas. That's why I'm so emphatic with every article I read, every statement I make, I'm giving you independent peer-reviewed literature that we check that is not funded by the pharmaceutical industry. And we have over a million articles. So we have plenty to substantiate any of the cases we share with you. This is from Sayer G, Green Med Info. Quote, what if 90% of the peer-reviewed clinical research, the holy grail, the conventional medical system, is false? A seismic shift is occurring in the field of evidence-based medicine that a rare few are aware of, but which will likely affect everyone, as the standard of medical care today largely follows from this model. The very lifeblood of evidence-based medicine, the peer review and published clinical research results, which legitimizes the entire infrastructure and superstructure upon which conventional medical knowledge and practice is erected, has been revealed as mostly and patently false. Case in point, in an article entitled Why Most Published Research Findings Are False, and which is the most downloaded document of all time on PLOS, the public, PLOS stands for Public Library of Medicine, a peer review, open access journal, John Lonodis explains in detail how, quote, it can be proven that most claimed research findings are false. For many current scientific fields, claimed research findings may all often be simply accurate measures of a prevailing bias, end quote. The Atlantic published a piece on his work entitled Lies, Damn Lies, and Medical Science, well worth reading, which opened with, quote, much of what medical researchers conclude in their studies is misleading, exaggerating, or flat out wrong. So why are doctors, to a striking extent, still drawing upon misinformation in their way everyday practice, end quote. He revealed that about half of the most highly regarded research findings within evidence-based medicine are either wrong or significantly exaggerated. He zoomed in on 49 of the most highly regarded research findings in medicine over the last 13 years as judged by science's community's two standard measures. The papers had appeared in the journals most widely cited in research articles, and the 49 articles themselves were the most widely cited articles in these journals. Quote, of the 49 articles, 45 claim to have uncovered effective interventions. 34 of these claims have been retested, and 14 of these, or 41%, have been convincingly shown to be wrong or significantly exaggerated. If between a third and a half of the most acclaimed research in medicine was proven untrustworthy, the scope and impact of the problem were undeniable. That article was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Time magazine wrote about his findings the same year with a piece entitled, quote, "A Researcher's Claim, 90% of Medical Research is Wrong," the title of which speaks resoundingly for itself. Now keep in mind that the gold standard for the multi-trillion dollar conventional evidence-based medicine medical model is the very research that this person now says is mostly lies, false, fraudulent. This model, which apparently thrives despite or even because of its falsity, largely determines what drugs are used, what surgical procedures employed, or conversely, what treatments can not be used. They won't promote vitamins or herbs in disease prevention, not at all. It also shields those who practice this dominant and only truly legally sanctioned form of medicine against potential calamity and moral, criminal, and financial liabilities. So, how many folks, for instance, are aware of the Cochrane database review on preventing influenza in healthy children with flu vaccines shows that the evidence proving their safety and efficacy in children under 2 is conspicuously lacking? Why would anyone question the rationality of vaccinating infants and young children against influenza when the CDC and FDA presents as if it's safe and effective? Here's what the review states. Quote, "It was surprising to find only one study of unactivated vaccine in children under 2, given current recommendations to vaccinate healthy children from 6 months of age in the United States, Canada, and parts of Europe and Australia. If immunization in children is to be recommended as a public health policy, large-scale studies assessing important outcomes and directly comparing vaccine types are urgently required." End quote. So they're saying there's no evidence. Well, you wouldn't know that, would you? From all the ads, from all the people who are experts saying, oh, we have a problem, we have the flu, let's vaccinate our children. And we assume that there are studies showing it's safe and effective. There are not. They don't have the studies. So much of what goes down today is medical practice is just total fraud. So now people are finally calling it out. Took a long time, but it's getting there. And all because they knew how to game the system. All because of the money that's involved. I'm Gary Nall, here in our studios in New York, and I found the article in the New York Times, and I'm going to read it here. It says the following: "Lawmakers attack cost of new hepatitis drug." I'll quote this from Andrew Pollack. "A new drug to treat hepatitis C that cost $1,000 a pill has caused rising concern among insurers and state Medicaid programs. It has now also spurred interest from Democratic congressmen whose queries about the drug prompted a sell-off in biotech stocks on Friday. Three Democrat members of the House Energy and Commerce Committee have demanded that Gilead Sciences, the developer, justify the price of its drug, which is called Sovaldi. Quote, "Our concern is that a treatment will not cure patients if they cannot afford it." Well, this drug, when I looked into it, I can't find where it cures hepatitis. But $1,000 a pill? That's just the beginning. Here's what's not mentioned. Are there any treatments that are available that could help a person improve the quality of their life if they have hepatitis B or C? And the answer is yes. Let me just share with you why it's so important to know what alternatives exist. What do we know? We know that hepatitis is simply an inflammation in a person's liver. And that can come from alcohol, from viruses, from chemicals in the environment. It can come from scarring, from having a lot of sugar in the diet, especially fructose. But hepatitis is originally from a viral infection. Now, why is that important? Because it's the liver that is supposed to cleanse the body of toxins, dead cells and fats and hormones. And a yellowish substance called bilirubin that is the byproduct, the breakdown of old red blood cells. So if the liver is not able to do this, then you end up with the autotoxemia. You get an enlarged, tender liver, and that's dangerous. Hepatitis B, by the way, also referred to as serum hepatitis is spread through contact with infected blood, and hepatitis C, the most serious form of hepatitis, kills thousands of people every year in the United States. Millions of Americans have it. In fact, I was surprised because once I was counseling just in a normal week, and five out of five women over the age of 45, when they were telling me what they had, none of them knew they had hepatitis C. And they were all living healthy lifestyles. So when they got their blood chemistry done and found it, they were shocked. And I said, you're living a healthy lifestyle now. Was there ever a time in life when you didn't? Well, yeah, but that was way long ago. Well, that's how long you've had the virus. So what could we do to be healthy if we have hepatitis without taking a $1,000 pill, which does not reverse it? First and foremost, you want to protect your liver. What is one of the most important nutrients to protect your liver? Alpha-lipoic acid, generally from 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams divided doses a day. Then beta, 1,3-D-glucan. That's also great at stimulating the macrophages, which help get rid of cellular debris. Then I would suggest a free-form amino acid, what are called the branched-chain amino acids. L-arginine, cysteine, methionine, and glutathione would also be good. IP6, which stands for inositol hexaphosphate, that's also good. Garlic, 4 or 5 times a day. The sulfur is very good for your liver, so eating onions and eating garlic are too great for you. But if you have a problem with garlic, simply take the liquid garlic and squirt it in your mouth. That's good. SAMe, that is phenomenal and for your liver. The coenzyme Q10, generally 3 times a day, and dimethylglycine, 3 times a day. And milk thistle, vitamin C drips. I've seen people reverse hepatitis. I've helped people reverse hepatitis B and C with intravenous vitamin C and high aqueal vitamin A. The black currant seed oil, crucial, 3 times a day. Shark liver oil and emmitake mushroom, reishi mushroom, shiitake mushroom extracts. 7-keto DHEA increases antibody interferon-2 formation. Artichoke, great for liver. Ayurvedic medicine, good. Burdock, excellent. Ligustrum, good for immune enhancement and anti-inflammatory. Olive leaf extract, yes. Schisandra, yes. Turmeric, yes. Raw vegetables, lots of juices. Dark green, yes. So those are inexpensive. Those have efficacy, and yet you never hear them discussed. So the next time someone's arguing over the price of a pill, so they take it from 1,000 and they make compromise, now it's 900, it's all so stupid. Why don't they ever let any adults into the room in any congressional hearing? There are thousands of people that could give evidence of how they've improved or reversed from serious illnesses, all different types of illnesses. How many healthcare practitioners, licensed healthcare practitioners, are there in the United States who promote alternative or holistic or Gaia-based therapies? Over 80,000 of us. 80,000. And yet, you would never know any of that exists based upon the New York Times. They just never can get the full picture. From our environmental segment, glyphosate. This is from GM Watch. Quote, glyphosate was detected in the urine and organs of dairy cows, as well as the urine of rabbits and humans in a new study. And chronically ill people had higher levels of the pesticide in urine. Well, hold on a second. We're not supposed to have any of that in our body, right? Well, here it is. Cows fed on GM genetically modified free feed had lower glyphosate concentrations in urine than cows fed with a feed containing GMOs. Yet another nail in the coffin for claims that products with GMO-fed animals are no different from products from animals fed non-GMO. Humans eating predominantly organic food had lower levels, but it's still everywhere. So one more reason not to do it. And from our environmental climate segment today, far beneath the surface of the ocean, deep currents act as conveyor belts, channeling heat and carbon and oxygen and nutrients around the globe. According to Terra Daily, a new study by the University of Pennsylvania and McGill University has found that recent climate change may be acting to slow down one of these conveyor belts with potentially serious consequences for the future of the planet's climate. Quote, our observations are showing us that there is less formation in these deep waters near Antarctica. This is a worrisome because if this is the case, we're likely going to see less uptake of human-produced or anthropogenic heat and carbon dioxide by the ocean, making this a positive feedback loop for climate change. That's not good. You don't want to mess with the current of cold, salty, and dense water that flows 2,000 meters under the ocean surface from near the Antarctic coast towards the equator. It's been shrinking in recent decades, and this is cause for concern because the current is believed to hide heat and carbon from the atmosphere. And the Southern Ocean takes up approximately 60% of the anthropogenic heat produced on Earth and about 50% of the anthropogenic carbon dioxide. So the Southern Ocean is emerging as being very, very important for regulating climate. So if it starts to warm up, then watch the cold happen in Europe. It could drop the temperature by 12 degrees in Europe. And boy, that would just be devastating. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Part of the music. We're going to have a lot of disco music at the upcoming dance party, the celebration for the BAI listeners. And I was able to get the room that was not going to be a part of the evening, the VIP room, opened up, so we have room for another 135 people. We were packed as of yesterday, so if you want to come to the dance party, it's free. It's a celebration of being able to come together, celebrate life. There won't be smoking or drinking or drugs. Just happy people having a good time. And so give a call at 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. But I promise you those extra places will be gone later today. That'll be the second Wednesday in April. So I look forward to having you there. Also, we are now on pace to do 2 original articles per week and put them up so people can benefit from them. This week, it's women's health articles. And so we have some important articles, a natural approach to the human papillomavirus and a natural approach to breast cancer. Plus, we also put up some hard-hitting investigative reporting articles. All the articles are in one place, making it very easy for you to get to them, blog.garynoll.com. So it's on our blog.garynoll.com, and there's all the articles, and they're free. There is a public service. All of our articles are fully referenced, are fully vetted. They're footnoted and sourced, referenced. They go through a process here of scholars and staff, review everything, so you can use the material there with confidence. Now, let's go to our phone. We're standing by in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, is Dr. Michael Smith. He's a medical doctor, and he is the senior health scientist for Life Extension. And I have a lot of respect for Bill Falloon. Boy, is he courageous taking on the FDA as he has, and great magazine. And Dr. Smith received his medical degree from the University of Texas, did his internship at the University of Utah, and he was a cardiovascular medical liaison. He's done a lot of research on what it takes to get healthy. Nice to have you with us today.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
When people are planning to adopt a supplemental regimen into their lives, You identify three primary levels in the supplemental pyramid that people need to consider in order to assure a maximal healthy plan,
right. Yep.
The foundational, the personal, and the optimal level. So explain each of these levels and provide some examples for how people can personalize their supplementation to guarantee their regimen will be most effective for their specific health needs.
Oh, sure. I really appreciate this. So as you mentioned, I like to teach people to kind of think of their regimen in the form of a pyramid. So the very most important part is the bottom, or as you said, the foundation. As you know, that without a good foundation, just about anything you do in life, things aren't going to work out too well. So, and that's true for supplements as well. So the foundational supplements include the basic nutrients, the basic vitamins, minerals, plant extracts, antioxidants, omega oils that the body needs to stay healthy, to repair and regenerate, and to keep us healthier longer. So the foundational supplements start with an ideally dosed multivitamin. When I say ideally dosed, I coined that term in the book. You know, I have a sister who takes a very generic multivitamin. I think it was the first one she saw off some shelf in some random health food store. And that's a good thing. I'm glad she did that. But it's very underdosed, in my opinion. You know, most people don't realize this. Multivitamins, the generic ones, are still dosed based on the recommended daily intake and allowance, which was developed in the 1940s to prevent things like scurvy. So if you want to prevent scurvy and rickets, fine. You know, stick with that generic multivitamin. But I think today people really are looking for so much more. The research is very clear. You know, we do a lot of research at Life Extension, and you know, it's clear that the higher doses of these important nutrients can do so much more than just preventing those nutrient deficiencies. So I call it an ideally dosed multivitamin based on research that provides a new level of nutrition to really optimize your health. Now, once you have that going, that's the most important product. The next one that I think that we all need to be doing are the omega-3 oils, about 1 to 2 grams a day of omega-3s, whatever source you want to do. I don't argue with people anymore which sources. I personally like the fish oil, but if you want to get it through flax and different seeds and nuts, that's fine. Just make sure you're doing about 1 to 2 grams. Once you have the omega oils, I then think the third foundational supplement, which is so important, is the ubiquinol CoQ10. You know, one of the leading theories of why we age, and we've shown this at Life Extension, is something called mitochondrial decay. Of course, the mitochondria are the powerhouses of the cells. And if the mitochondria can't produce the energy that the cell needs to function, the cell doesn't function, the tissue doesn't function, and eventually you don't function. So replacing ubiquinol CoQ10 in a supplement form is so important. That's why it's in the foundation. And then the last foundational supplement to round out the four is a probiotic. You know, I often teach that you're only as healthy as your gut. If you can't digest food and eliminate waste and absorb those good nutrients, you're just not going to be very healthy. And probiotics support all three of those levels of digestion. Plus, they do so much more beyond that. Now, once you have, Dr. Noel, those foundational supplements going, and that's not personalized yet. That's for everybody. Those are the nutrients that really make us human, make us healthy humans. And so that's so important to begin there. But as you move up the pyramid, the middle part is all about personalization, and I do believe that this is the wave of the future for all forms of medicine, where we really look at the individual and we let the individual person tell us their story. And when we factor in things like current symptoms, risk factors through blood testing, family history, personal history, and when we factor all those in, We can allow each individual person to tell us their story, what their body is telling us. Once I know that kind of information and I understand what the issues are for that person, I can then line you up or your listeners up with the right supplements based on research that can help you the best. That's all about personalization. Now, how did I do that? I did that by creating 16 health quizzes. These are the same types of questions that I would ask when I was practicing medicine out in Dallas, internal medicine. You know, these are real clinical risk assessment questions. They're easy to answer. They're just yes or no. But from that, I develop a score for each body part, and that score reflects risk, the higher the score, the greater the risk for having issues there, and then I can line you up with the supplements. So it's all about personalizing our approach to supplements today. And then the top part of the pyramid, the optimization, these are the nutrients that I like to do to help manage the aging process better. You know, coming from life extension, we are a life extensionist a company. We focus on longevity, but not just living longer. Right? You know, conventional medicine has helped us to live longer, but we're living longer in nursing homes. That to me is not a very good thing. So I focus on living healthier longer, and I use a lot of the research that we've done at Life Extension, to help people manage the most common theories and mechanisms of why we age, and that's the top part of the pyramid. So you have the foundation, the personalization, and the optimization as you move from the bottom up. And so it, not only am I helping you to personalize in the middle, but we're also prioritizing the most important supplements for you to the least important, and I put it all together in the supplement pyramid.
Good for you. Give us your email address, please.
DrMike@lef.org. That's lef.org.
Mike, I appreciate you being on and letting people know that there's a right way.
Thank you.
Practical
so
way and a scientific, true scientific based way. And let Bill know, I believe he's doing just a terrific job down there.
I will. I definitely will. We're really proud of the work he does. He really stands up for us in the industry.
He does. Thanks a lot for being with us today.
All right. Take care.
All right. And that was Dr. Michael Smith. And I might mention that that more than ever before, vitamins, herbs, supplements are under attack. Every single time we're attacked, we do the basic research and find out that they've been wrong in every single instance. And behind all this is the pharmaceutical industry. Because after all, it's just good business. If they keep you on drugs for life or until you die, and the more drugs they get you on, the more profitable it is, then there's a probability you're not going to be living a healthy lifestyle. And they count upon people not being disciplined, not being curious enough, not doing their homework. Because when people do their homework, they find out that I could have prevented this condition that I have, or there are other approaches to it, just as I gave you an alternative approach to hepatitis today. And that's what's important. In fact, coming in, I'm going to go to our open lines now. I'm going to save my commentary for tomorrow. Instead, Luann Panessi just walked in the studio, and I'm going to have open calls on our talkback segment. Our number to call in, 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And, Luann, you had hepatitis B.
I did.
Okay. You also had herpes.
You love telling people this.
I don't love telling people that.
Yes, I did.
All right. And you also had fibrocystic breast. You had ovarian cysts.
Chronic fatigue syndrome.
Chronic fatigue. You had mycoplasma.
I did.
Had you not made a radical change in your lifestyle, do you believe that you'd be alive today?
No, absolutely not, because I was already, they wanted to do a bilateral mastectomy because my cystic breast, from drinking all the coffee, from having chronic fatigue syndrome, it's all connected. The cysts were turning precancerous, and they said it's time to do the bilateral mastectomy, get you on chemo, get you on radiation. And I ran the oncology units, and I said, I am not going to be a statistic on my own unit, not happening, because I know the game. I see what people go through.
Well, you were the nurse administrator of the hospital.
I ran the inpatient oncology units. I was there for 18 years.
And you've been an oncological nurse for 35 years, right?
38 years.
38 ago. Years. All right. You're looking younger, so you're doing something right. Now, here's the issue. Based upon the New York Times saying that there's a drug at $1,000 a pill. Now, you can imagine how many pills are going to have these people on. And the pharmaceutical company, Smart, they wrote the bill, the Medicare bill, that was passed in the middle of the night, that was only given to the legislators that morning, 1,300 pages, and they put in there that the government could not negotiate for cheaper prices for any drug. They could not seek out through the VA or Medicare or Medicaid, they could not seek out a generic drug. And as a result, 11 of the people who were on that bill pushing it through the House, they all went to work for the pharmaceutical industry, one at $2 million a year, shortly thereafter. Now, I'm going to do a whole hour on Obamacare and why the pathetic excuses over on MSNBC who keep, you know, saying how good it is, or some of the people in the New York Times. It's a terrible piece of legislation, but not for the reasons that either the right or left are arguing. Who wrote it? Let's just start off. This is what's important. Who benefits most from Obamacare?
The insurance companies.
That's
and the
correct.
FDA.
Who wrote the actual bill? Wrote all of it. Every word in it.
Probably the insurance companies.
The insurance companies. Who met with the White House and the president in order to get this passed?
The people that were funding all of his reelection campaigns, the insurance companies.
And the lobbyists for those. Who were the medical doctors brought forward to testify about how efficacious it would be?
Probably paid for by the FDA.
All financially connected physicians using their academic pedigree to give legitimacy to it. Who is the doctor that you see all the time, Dr. Emanuel, on Fox News, talking about it, why this is such a good one? He's the brother of Ron Emanuel.
Oh, brother. Oh.
You know, who's now mayor of Chicago and was the head of Obama's chief of staff. You have to just follow the money. So if you start off with a group that has a financial interest in the outcome and that could bring them over $1 trillion in additional profits, why isn't anyone talking about what do you actually get? They're talking about, well, what's going to be covered, not covered in co-pays. They're not talking about, will this give us safer medicine? Will this be preventative medicine? Will this give us alternative medicine?
How is it any different from what happened to Bernie Madoff? They just found all of his five, you know, minions all guilty as well because they saw him as Santa Claus. They saw him as a way to get money. Same thing. This is the same thing.
Question. Do you have hepatitis B today?
I do not. I have my core antibodies. That's it.
By the way, just so you understand, that just shows that she had had it, but she has no. Herpes, gone.
Mm-hmm.
Gone. Fibrocystic breast, ovarian cyst, all gone. Mycoplasm, gone. Okay.
Chronic fatigue syndrome, gone. Cytomegalovirus, reversed.
How long did it take?
It took me about 4 years of integrating the detoxification lifestyle, which you outlined beautifully in your DVD, as well as getting integrative and alternative therapies.
You were at the Tri-State Healing Center getting the protocols, and that is just, you're one person, but a very credible person because you have all your medical records. So for someone who says, well, this stuff doesn't really work, does it? Yeah, it works. And we just want people to know, before you take a $1,000 pill, why don't you look at what can really actually help you? Let's say hello to Carolyn from Connecticut. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Gary. I'm calling because I wanted to know if there's a herbs and supplements that someone could take if they are getting off a pharmaceutical called Suboxone. That pharmaceutical is given for opiates. And
there's a lot that you could do if you want to detox from opiates, but why don't you do this? Why don't you email me through Luann what opiates you're trying to get off of, and I'll do a whole protocol and give you all the different options and alternatives you have, and then get yourself into the hands of a clinical practitioner who can guide you through the detoxification. It generally takes between 3 to 6 months to detoxify the body from the opiates. That's my experience. But yes, it can happen. Okay? All the best to you.
Email me at whnn@aol.com. whnn@aol.com.
Catherine from Queens. Hi, Catherine.
Oh, Gary. How are you?
Good.
Two things. First of all, you mentioned a list of vegan practitioners. I'd be very interested in that. And the other thing is, we who are of this mind are kind of caught between a rock and a hard place because we need to have a doctor who is affiliated with a hospital, you know, as we get older especially. And it's tricky because you're in conflict with them all the time. What do we do about that?
Well, you are right. It's always good to have a doctor who is affiliated with the hospital because if you need that, then you have it. But you also have to be aware that more than ever before, patients are informing themselves of their rights and are aware of what they are allowed or will allow a physician to do to them when they're in a hospital. And thank goodness that we have patient rights groups that advocate. So if a doc, before someone gives you a drug, you can look up in the physician's desk reference and see whether or not you should be taking that drug in combination with other drugs. So that's also important. And if you contact Luann, she'll give you the list of some of the local doctors that have hospital affiliations. That way you can see if any of them match your needs. Okay? All the best to you. We'll take one more call. Let's say hello to Tim from New Jersey. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Gary.
How's it going over there in New Jersey?
Oh, it's great. Everything's great, man.
Do you have to take a shower every time you leave Trenton?
I don't frequent Trenton.
Good. Well, you're smart.
I understand what you mean.
Why don't you advocate this? Why don't you have a giant toilet flush handle so everyone leaving Trenton can just flush it?
Yeah.
Because, man, you are in one of the most corrupt states in America.
I don't know if it's just so packed up with filth that it would take a sandblaster to get it off.
How can we help you today?
Gary, I was rather wondering about something. I don't know all of the particulars of it, but I was considering that with what's happened in Japan, is there the possibility that the CoQ10, because from what I was able to find out is that there's a corporation that owns the patent on the production of CoQ10 and ubiquinol, called Kaneka.
Yeah, that if ubiquinone is made in Japan, and they are tested for all contaminants, including radiation, and no, there are
it
no...
It is tested.
Yeah, it is tested. There is no contaminants.
Because thought that the thing where they made the agreement they were going to secretly not test anything was applying, possibly.
No, that did not pertain to things that are already tested for quality and purity.
Oh, good. All right? I kind of stopped using it.
No, it's fine.
I'm glad. I'm very relieved.
It's fine. All the best to you, Tim.
Thanks, Gary.
And one final thought in studio from Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hey, Gary. Well, here is something that comes to me on the Internet now and again in my email. Yours is probably the only show where we discuss genocide that's going on around the globe. And the question becomes, why is it never discussed on any of the other news outlets? We don't hear anything about it.
We're afraid of complicity. We're afraid of finding that in some way we have been supportive of it. For example, if you look at the ethnic cleansing that has occurred in the occupied territories, we would be complicit up to our eyeballs. If you looked at the Clinton administration in Rwanda, we were absolutely complicit because we have been working in trying to destabilize that country since about 1988. And there's a whole story on that. And that's why we didn't actively intervene. And the person that would later go in and become the head of Rwanda, for example, was the head of the movement to oust those in power and purge the Tutsis. But we were behind that. And there's been reports since then and investigations, including a very detailed French investigation, showing that we were up to our eyeballs in that. Because people wondered, why did we never intervene? We could have stopped it because we were supportive of it. Why, for example, didn't any country in the world, any major country, protest the United States' sanctions in Iraq? That was genocide. Because when Madeleine Albright got on 60 Minutes with Leslie Stahl and asked the question, if you have a half million children dying, half million because of our sanctions, is that justified? And she said, yes, it's justified. Well, would it be justified if it were her children? And they also violated the Geneva Convention. They intentionally bombed, and documents came out under Freedom of Information Act showing the Defense Department intentionally targeted power stations, water purification stations, electric grids serving the public. These were not military targets. And as a result, that is a violation. That's a war crime. Well, 500,000 of the poor kids died. Now, the wealthy, those in power, the Ba'athist Party, the 200,000 supporting Saddam Hussein in the Sunni sector, they weren't adversely affected. They had the money. He had palaces all over the country. His army was well-fed and had water purification. But if you're a poor person, you didn't. You kill 500,000 kids, that's genocide. Why wasn't anyone called out on it? Why wasn't anyone held accountable? Why didn't the World Court bring those responsible for that campaign to justice. Because the moment you do, you then make the people you're calling out an enemy. And then you have to ask, have we been complicit at any level in our own government? And the answer is, probably. And you want that to come out and embarrass the people in your own country? No. Can they hurt you? Yes, they can. So that's why the American administrations have been engaged in ethnic cleansing and regime change in over 60 countries around the world in the last 100 years. We have never been challenged on the legality, the morality of it by any other countries, except for possibly China and Russia. And who are they to accuse anyone of anything, since they're just as bad? We're out of time. Let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Hello, Luann. Today we're talking about women, race, class, culture, identity, and power.
Excellent. By the way, tomorrow I'm going to do an in-depth discussion on charities, churches, around the United States being threatened with arrest for feeding homeless people, including one charity, one church out west that on a very cold night when it was 16 below zero, opened their doors so some of the people outside could come in and sleep. And they were threatened with arrest for allowing homeless people on a sub-zero freezing night by the police. But then why should that surprise us? Did you see that video where the police, all these armed police shot and killed the camper yesterday? Did you see that, Utrice?
No.
A guy was out camping, and you know he and they came up to him, and he's got his sleeping bag, and they say, you're not allowed to be here, and he's okay. So he puts on his backpack, and he says, I'm going to walk down to you. And as he's walking, you know, 20 feet from him, they just open fire and kill him.
Oh, wow.
And then they sicked a dog on him when he's laying on the ground, and he's yelling, please don't hurt me, and they just went up and just pumped him and pumped him. And, of course, they'll be given some citation by, I guess, their local commander or something.
Oh.
They'll get away with it, and no one will condemn the police for and the city council for wanting to throw homeless people out on the street. That's what we become as a country. That's what we become when we lose our moral balance. Shame on us for not calling these punks out, and shame on us for allowing the police to act like barbarians in our gates. Back to you, Teresa, in a moment.
Okay.